There's no success all for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand, divided we fall.
It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, one of the fabulous little stations in the United States. Oh, goodness. It's a fabulous morning here in New Zealand. It's 7.02 a.m. Tuesday, October the 5th, and it's a Communism Appreciation October. Red October. I want to give a shout out to all the brutal dictators out there. Oh, the tyranny. Love it. Absolutely love it. Getting on to more serious things. We have a good guest coming up next segment, and Will will be joining us as well. And our associate producer, Chris, has been sending us some decent little articles. Some scary ones, I would probably say. And those of you who have been watching the news lately, Bin Laden's back. Yep, obviously. Just like the last 10 CIA-sponsored videos he did. Now toting climate change like it's the greatest thing since, sliced up people that have been killed by a suicide attack. Yep. That's probably the most culturally sensitive way I can describe it. You know, slaughter's great. Don't you just love it? And also, and from Jane Burgermeister, my favourite Burgermeister, Civil War in Germany? In Stuttgart, 21 protests rock the country. It's become a familiar sight in Stuttgart, Germany. Anti-riot police in dark blue uniforms, wearing helmets with visors, body armor, and carrying batons and pepper sprays, gathered in Stuttgart's main park last Thursday. It was a familiar formation, 1,000 police standing in lines in front of trucks with mounted water cannons. But it was not the familiar opposition. School children, the elderly, the well-heeled had gathered among the oak trees. They'd come out in force to protest against the euros and the dollar collapse. We'll be right back after the break.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. is business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Welcome back.
Brush our teeth. That's all part of it. That's foreplay. You go sort out the recycling. That's not part of it, but it's still very important.
Welcome to the very important show. It's the Finney Eastwood show. Those of you out there making truth of babies during the break, I'm sure we make decent foreplay, moody setting music. But no, we have a guest on, Rosalind Peterson. She's been researching and finding the truth out for quite some time now, and she has some ridiculously incredible information for us. Rosalind, are you on the line there?
Yes, I'm here, and thank you very much for having me on your show today.
Well, I'd like to extend a big welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, and also a big thank you for the general research that you're doing at the moment. I wonder if you might fill in the audience as just to who you are and what your research centers around.
Yes. My name is Rosalind Peterson, and I live in Northern California. I was born and raised here on a working farm, and my background is agriculture as well as toxic chemicals and genetically modified foods. That's one of my areas of expertise. But what I'd like to say is that I put up the website, the agriculturedefensecoalition.org, because I began to be concerned about a lot of the things that are happening in our upper atmosphere. The U.S. is conducting a massive amount of tests. Our military is conducting many of those tests. And I became concerned about its impact on human health, agriculture, and also on our water supplies. And I'm afraid that some of the pollution from these tests could negatively impact the population as a whole around the world.
Now, you're talking about chemtrails, aren't you?
Well, I don't use the term, but yes, I'm talking about persistent jet contrails, yes.
Okay, so the geoengineering is a big topic, and we've gotten into it a couple of times on this show. And one thing that really jumped out at me was his name, G. Edward Griffin, doing a doco about it. And in it, they have a look at documents and saying that they want to dump about 300 cubic million tons of aluminum on the Earth just this year.
I'm not sure what the tonnage is, but I do know that the military is probably putting up about 500 tons of aluminum coated fiberglass or chaff worldwide every year. And so I do know that the U.S. Navy put up an aluminum oxide dust cloud on September 19, 2009, over the entire East Coast of the United States. So there is a lot of upper atmospheric experiments going on.
And one thing that this feeds into was control of the food supply. As the persistent contrails rain down their poison on the land, it contaminates the soil and makes it much harder for crops to grow, with the exception, of course, of aluminum-resistant crops from Monsanto.
That's correct.
So isn't that lovely of them, you know? Just in case we entirely run out of the ability to grow food the natural way, we can all have these wonderful cancer-causing GMOs to save us from starvation and instead just give us plain death. Wouldn't that just be fabulous?
It certainly would.
And how exactly are they working on getting the food supply under control here, Rosalind?
Well, There's a handful of companies there, Dow Chemical, Bayer Crop Science. There's a whole series of chemical and seed manufacturing companies which have joined together to genetically modify a lot of the food crops that we see, potatoes, the basics, potatoes, rice, beans. You have all of the main food groups, even cotton, for example, tomatoes, anything that grows that most people use around the world, they're genetically modifying them so that we'll be dependent on these companies for our foods. They won't reproduce unless we buy seeds from them. Unless we use their pesticides and herbicides and insecticides, they won't grow, and their fertilizers. And they're modifying them so that they will ripen more slowly, so that during crop production food cycles, you may only get one crop instead of four or five different crops produced during the course of a growing cycle.
Yeah, and this has been happening in India of late, and as a result, enormous amounts of suicide amongst farmers who can no longer keep crops, or seeds for that matter, after every harvest, and it's just too hard for them. And at the moment as well, and we got into this conversation on a show the other day, desertification is happening in India as well because of the intense chemical farming methods. And, you know, we're kind of discussing what the outcome of control of the food supply would be. And India is probably the most prominent example in my mind because it's pretty freaking obvious that all of the traditional methods of farming basically are to be destroyed, even though they still work very, very well, feed people and make sure that the farmers still survive, because it's not that difficult to grow. But instead, it's going to be incredibly expensive, and there are no projections that I know of that are accurate enough to figure out precisely what the damage will be from all these chemical farming processes, as well as the fact that they're using genetically modified seeds, which can't be contained.
That's true. And the genetically modified crops will eventually cross-pollinate wild plants as well, changing their genetics. So the whole process is disastrous, and what it means is that a few corporations will control the world's food supply, and that any country or entity that wants to have their own food supply will not be allowed to do so unless they are beholden to these companies who will dictate the rules quite severely in the future.
Now, surely there must be resistance to this kind of agenda.
There is resistance to this kind of agenda, but what's happening is that here in the United States, for example, they're trying to patent all of the seeds. These corporations want to patent every single seed so that no one can use them unless they pay the royalties or they pay for these seeds, and that it will be illegal for people, even in their own countries with their own seeds, to plant them. The Monsanto, for example, has hired Blackwater, a corporation known for enforcement tactics in the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, come on. They're real nice guys. Don't rag on Blackwater.
I have to. I'm sorry. but anyway, they've hired Blackwater to be their enforcer, and also to intimidate people who, in other words, Monsanto wants to threaten. And I think that this is a disastrous consequence. And the United States government, under Agriculture Secretary Vilsack and Mr. Sadiq, he's our foreign relations agriculture promoter and trade and trade representative for agriculture, they're promoting these practices. And so what happens is you have a government that is working hand in glove right now with these genetically modified food companies and chemical producers.
Now, I understand that, and also there is, every time that the government tries to do something real naughty, or big bad corporations like Monsanto do this, they have a PR line that they follow. Now, Blackwater has been deploying a new PR line, and it's called, "We're going to change our name to Z." And that's what they do, basically, all these really big evil-ass companies. As soon as they get a real bad reputation on one of their brand names, they just change their name and hope that people don't notice.
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah. And so what is Z doing in order to further the Monsanto cause?
Well, we don't know exactly. They just Monsanto admitted that they had hired Z to work for them, but other companies are also, in other words, these chemical companies and other companies are hiring these private contractors as enforcers. And so it seems to me that the trend will be that they will file lawsuits against private individuals and wear everyone down, both financially and by the inability to be able to produce a crop without interference from these companies that isn't purchased from these companies.
And how are they selling this to the public?
They're not selling it to the public. You see, they know that they're unpopular. But then what they do is they get laws passed so that you can't talk about them or take their name in vain, essentially. And so what happens is that you can be sued by them for, in other words, whether it's just or not, for raising their name in any negative way. And also that they're suing individual farmers and ranchers. They have so much money that they isolate people like in Canada, or they isolate people in the United States, and they take them one at a time so that you're not attacked as a group, and the farmers and the ranchers don't have a chance to get together and take it as a whole because they're sued privately and individually. And therefore, most people don't know. The farmers and the ranchers try to fight back, and eventually they're bankrupted and, in the most cases, lose because they just can't afford the lawyers and everything needed to fight the companies. And Monsanto and other companies are really good at sitting in your backyard and in the street and harassing you and following you when you're going through the process. So most people, because it's not a national movement to stop the GMOs, most people don't understand what's happening in the backyard and to people individually. They have no clear idea, and the media doesn't cover it.
Well, of recent times, Germany has voted to ban GMO corn and various other things, and this is because of public awareness. Now, the public is very, very uninformed about this issue and specificity, control of the food supply. And I would act under the assumption that your website, agriculturaldefensecoalition.org, aims to remedy the situation which you referred to earlier, where the farmers are all isolated and not in contact and cannot be included as a group and are individually being taken out.
Yes, and so I'm going to be working more on that issue in the upcoming months because I think it's extremely important that people understand what's happening. And also, the United States now used to be a net exporter of food to countries around the world. And we have reached a point now where they have dropped crop production in the United States to where we are dependent on other countries and are now a net importer of food needed to supply food for our country. Most people do not clearly understand the implications of this either.
Well, the United States is supposed to be the breadbasket of the world, and we've got a combination of factors going on now to destroy the food supply. We've had, coincidentally, a whole bunch of oil spills all over the world, a couple in the Great Lakes and China and Bolivia and all that. You know, all these other things are happening. And on top of that, we've got the Gulf of Oil Cano crisis. Goodness knows what the outcome of that is going to be.
Oh, it's an ecological, that's an ecological disaster here. Yeah. There's no way around it. Just because they compounded the oil spill by putting in the Corexit dispersants that were supposed to disperse the oil, but just put them out of sight on the bottom of the ocean or under the surface so that people can't see it. And the health effects, right now there's complete denial by the media, no investigations about the health effects because BP is trying to cover up by paying people that if we pay you for, you know, disrupting your lifestyle or doing any work for us, you can't talk to the media and you can't tell about your health effects or what's going on. BP has even set up their own medical places where people can go so that they don't go to the public hospitals and then no one knows what's happening there either. So it's an ecological and human health disaster for sure.
Is this part of the Navy Mammals Kill-Off Program?
Well, oh gosh, I don't know how to tell you this, but our United States Navy, starting back under the Bush administration, decided that they were going to go ahead with surrounding the United States, the Pacific, the Atlantic, and the Gulf of Mexico, with five-year warfare experiments. And in these experiments, they're going to decimate about 11.7 million marine mammals over the course of these five-year programs. And right now, we are engaged in the Agricultural Defense Coalition.org and other groups are engaged in fending off the Navy right now because they're going to be using missiles, bomb testing, sonar exercises. You just can't imagine the number of chemicals they're going to be dumping into the ocean. And the type of exercises could trigger earthquakes from all of the bomb blasts and missile testing that they're going to be doing. And even the people in the Gulf of Mexico were surprised recently because the Obama administration told the Navy to do a report on the reconstruction of the Gulf of Mexico after the oil spill in the ocean area. But the shocking part was that the Navy failed to mention that they're going to be initiating warfare testing in that area for 5 years, along with the Air Force.
Isn't that nice of them?
Yes.
I love having informed consent because it allows me to make a decision about whether or not I'm going to get exterminated. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our special guest, Rosalind Peterson, is here. We'll be right back. Takes the oil cano poisons to get to New Zealand, we're still alive. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Will, good morning.
Morning, Vinnie. How are you on this fine morning?
Oh, I'm glad, just waiting for my Masonic chip to be put in.
Really?
No.
Oh, you're too old for that program, Vinny. It's not free for you.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to pay to get tracked and traced and tagged wherever I go. Our special guest on the line is Rosalind Peterson from AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org. If you go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, you'll see a little link to her website there. And we're talking about Monsanto's control of the food supply, how they're being backed up by Z, formerly known as Blackwater, but of course they changed that because everybody knows Blackwater's evil. But Z's got no problems. They're really nice guys. And and also the ultimate disaster movie is The Gulf of Oil, Kano, Part 1. Rosalind, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now, I hope I don't offend you with the fact that I don't take this stuff just as seriously as perhaps I should. But what I do know is that taking things too seriously drives people insane. And the problematic difficulties with subjects of this nature is that they're not simple, they're complicated, and they have a lot of elements behind them that need to be understood. The Gulf of Oil, Kano, for example, you're talking about these Navy testing programs, which are going to kill about 11.7 million marine mammals over the next 5 years. What is the stated intention of these tests?
Well, the our Navy says that it has to be ready for fighting wars, I suppose, all over. But in going, but what we kind of think of it here is that the Navy is the Navy and our government have decided to go to war on our oceans, on the food supply in our oceans, all kinds of testing. They're testing things that they tested, 20 years ago, and they're testing things that they know how it works already. But it's the future surveillance and drones. It's future unclassified warfare systems that we're worried about. It's new types of sonar that are much more devastating than what was used in the past. So we have become the guinea pigs for the United States military. And because they're testing in so many ocean areas and island areas, in the Pacific and the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico, this is going to have a worldwide effect on everyone. In other words, the effect of what we're doing is going to hit every country in one way or another, because we're going to disrupt the food supply and habitat for marine mammals, fish, everything else that's in the sea. And once we do that, it's going to set off hunger for coastal communities that depend on the oceans for food.
Certainly not a good thing. And we've been talking about the control of the food supply for some time, and now it appears as though the New World Order is trying to bring it into full swing. And I would act under the presumption that this is off the back of the fact that the whole agenda is being exposed at the moment, and they're scrambling right now to get the control mechanisms in place so that we can, well, basically go through an orderly extermination, in my opinion.
Well, it's an orderly extermination, but it's also going to mean that people are going to become very sick, that as the fish supply in many countries dwindles, not only from overfishing but from Navy warfare testing, then what's going to happen is that the animals inland in places like Africa and other areas are going to be poached because they don't have the fish supply in the coastal communities. So you're talking additional ecological disasters from these programs. I mean, even areas, I'll just read you a couple of sentences here. This was a June 19th, 2009 letter from Senator Barbara Boxer and Senator Dianne Feinstein. And in it, they address, it says, in many regions, the Navy plans to increase the number of its exercises or expand the areas in which they may occur, and virtually every coastal state of the United States will be affected. Some exercises will occur in the nation's most biologically sensitive marine habitats, including national marine sanctuaries and breeding habitats for many, many endangered species, including the North Atlantic right whale. In all, the Navy anticipates more than 2.3 million takes, or significant disruptions in marine mammal foraging, breeding, and other essential behaviors per year, or 11.7 million takes over the course of each five-year permit.
Oh, goodness gracious me.
So it's so when I look at this, I wonder I wonder about the motivation of the United States government to go to war on the world's oceans, and in other words, what's in those oceans that benefit people from all around the world, not just the United States.
Well, it seems to me whenever the government goes to war, they don't go to war against states. They don't go to war against real things. They simply go to war against human life, more or less. It's almost as if extermination is the bottom line here. And, you know, with this type of agenda in place, one would worry, and quite understandably so, that these terrible incidents will only get worse. I mean, I imagine that this is probably only just one part of the depopulation and reducing the food supply agenda here.
Well, it's one part of many, and corporate interests now, they talk about global governance or the New World Order, and part of the New World Order is that you're going to need enforcers to enforce. So we're going to use the U.S. military as probably the enforcers of the New World Order and corporations, and then we're going to be backing up these corporations that are genetically modifying our food and doing other things that we might not think is very good for the environment. So this is where we're heading, quite honestly. And I, you know, when you said keeping a sense of humor, I sometimes have to think of this in a humorous way, or it would bother me much more than it does. But one of the things that the Navy likes and the Air Force likes to talk about is how they're brilliant warriors. And so I kind of go back to the idea that we, the people, can be brilliant warriors and we can join together and put a stop to this. But it's going to take a tremendous amount of effort to do so.
Yeah, everybody kind of has to play their part, and I know how cliche that sounds, but it's very true. And, you know, with the sense of humor type thing, it's a coping mechanism, pure and simple. You know, I'd take sedatives, but I don't want to get addicted to them.
Well, you know, people can say, well, there's so many things going on that they decide that they can be, you know, depressed or be incapable of taking any action because they feel it's hopeless. And so what I tell people is, I said, pick an issue and then go for it. And if you won't be depressed if you're taking an action. What happens is if you just whine and complain and then take no action, no real direct action. I don't mean just going on the internet and whining and complaining. I mean taking some sort of action outside of that where you're talking to other people personally, doing different things, going to Washington, D.C., for example, and becoming a lobbyist for the people instead of a lobbyist for the corporations, essentially. And if we take action, it makes us feel better. And what happens is these corporations and governments and whatnot that want to be oppressive, they want us to be depressed and incapable of taking any action. That's their goal. And when we say, no, we're not going to do that, we're going to speak up and we're going to rebel and we're going to say no to these programs, not only do we feel better, but we start to put pressure back on them not to do some of these programs. And so that's all I can say. And I hope that people don't become depressed, but find a way to look at this information, which is all online. I mean, there's no classified documents on my website, nothing. The military and everyone else has volunteered to put this information online for us to look at. So, but we can take action, and there is hope here. And so if we don't keep our sense of humor, though, and we can't laugh about things, then that's when we're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're talking about negative spectrum of emotions, you know, in the new age sense of the word. Laughter's really good at releasing endorphins and keeping the brain kind of mellow. Some, in my case, somewhat mellow, dramatic. But there's a difference between anger and depression, and it's a question of motivation, right? Because if you're really depressed, it demotivates you, and you don't do anything, and then it's a vicious cycle. You just get more and more depressed and do less and less. However, when you get angry, you will only get more and more angry unless you start doing things. And that's the reason why I do this radio show, is because I'm really, really angry. And I don't want to lose that and become depressed and accomplish nothing. You know, people need to get motivated. They need to get fired up, and they need to go out there and do that, because what's the alternative here, Rosalind? What is it, extermination of the human race? Hey, that's something to not get upset about. Maybe we should go back to drinking our flat whites and watching The Simpsons.
Yes. Although I don't watch The Simpsons. That's too painful for me. But the thing, well, it is. It just is. But what I think is, though, that I think that it's like feeling that you're empowered to do this. And many people ask me, well, I've had the website up for a long time. I've had another website up since 2002. And people ask me, well, you've got military items on your website, you've got Navy items, you've got all kinds of things on your website. You know, is anyone coming after you? And I said, no, they're not. And because it's all public record, they have provided this information for me. Monsanto puts this information out for me. The Navy puts the information so I can put it online and tell people where to go and look at these things. So it's not like this is secret, but the mainstream media, and including television and the newspapers now, hardly ever tell the story. So what happens is people don't know, and people just think that what they see on television is what's happening around them when it isn't. And that's the part where we have to apply the pressure back and say the airwaves belong to us in the United States, and therefore they should be reporting on things that are important to us, not just things that they recycle every hour on the hour, which mean nothing and don't address these issues.
Yeah, yeah, and the mainstream media, although they have kind of this stranglehold on public consciousness, or perceived to be, they've been losing a lot of money for a long time. Americans are cancelling their cable en masse. People have begun to realize on the whole that mainstream media does nothing but lie to you or manipulate the truth at best. And shows like this one and all the other Patriot talk radio shows and TV shows like Conspiracy Theory by Jesse Ventura are rising to prominence amidst this, pesticide soup of propaganda. And people are waking up, which is a very positive thing. And it's not going to stop, ladies and gentlemen. The awakening has begun, and you can't put that giant back to sleep. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our special guest is Rosalind Peterson. We'll be right back.
Look at me, driving, and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command, because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust, 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 in a holocaust.
Welcome back, no ladies and gentlemen,
to the show that's all about parlor tricks and disinfo. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our special guest is Rosalind Peterson from the Agricultural Defence Coalition, where you can, and we are linking to that right now at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, where you can also tune into the live streams of the website. Rosalind, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Mm-mm. Well, we've got you on here for a full 2 hours, so I kind of wanted to get really kind of as in-depth as we can. Your Agricultural Defence Coalition, I kind of wanted to explain to the listeners what exactly you are trying to do with this. I mean, understandably, the food supply is under attack from many, many different directions. What role does this Defence Coalition have to play in protecting those?
Well, the first thing that I decided when I started doing research...
Sorry, we can't hear you, Rosalind. You have to speak up.
I'm sorry. When I first started to doing research in 2002 on many of these varied subjects, I finally decided that my database was too big to fit into fitting on two computers, but it was only going to help me. It wasn't going to help other people understand what the programs were, who were doing various types of programs, and what the impacts would be. So in 2006, I put up the AgriculturalDefenseCoalition.org website, and in doing that, began to put up the entire research database that I have on my computer's hard drive since 2002. So it's a massive amount of documentation covering agriculture, honeybee decline, lack of direct sunlight reaching the earth, and the health effects of lack of vitamin D from that process. Geoengineering got onto that because there was talk of putting up chemicals and particles into the atmosphere to reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the earth, which would decrease crop production. So what happened was is that this website has been growing over time and will increase by the end of this month to about 35,000 PDF files, documents, and other information on these various topics. The site map divides these issues into various subject matter, and then if you go to the search engine and put in terms, it will search for anything I have on that topic and bring it up for you. The water is going to be another problem in upcoming years as it's privatized around the world and people won't have access to water or access to clean water, or they won't have access to unpolluted water as these corporations privatize the world's water supply. Weather modification is on the website, and weather modification programs are being conducted in 50 countries, and in the United States and most countries, there are no laws which require public notification, debate, consent, or even require a knowledge of the program to be given to the public. So in this country right now, we have 66 ongoing weather modification programs listed by the U.S. Department of Interior. And in Canada and countries around the world, we are impacting both climate and weather from these programs. So this information is up on the website, and there's articles on what people can do. There's articles that synthesize this information a little bit so you don't have to do in-depth research if you don't want to. And then there's other items which give you background information for knowing that there are studies on this subject and you can look at them and see what's happening.
Yeah, and I wanted to get into this privatizing of the water supply because that's actually happening here in New Zealand as well. The national government, supposedly a conservative private business emphasizing government, has come in and said to the region of Auckland, hey, You've got $28 billion worth of public assets here. Let's privatize them. And everybody's like, hey, we don't want them privatized. And the government says, oh, yeah, okay, that's a problem because there's a clause in our local government act that says if we want to change everything, we have to ask the people what to do. So they said, all right, well, that's a bit of a problem. So let's remove that from the legislation. And so now nobody gets a say on what happens. And then Veolia, which is, interestingly enough, one of the companies helping to, quote-unquote, clean up the Gulf of Oil Kano, is now going to be in charge of Auckland's water supply, its public transport system, and various other elements to do with the running of the cities. And of course, this is all happening without the say-so of the people or any type of transparency whatsoever with unelected corporate boards, which are not able to have any public oversight or any public meetings. We'll be making the decisions with approximately 75% of all rates and resources through the city. Now, this is not an isolated incident either. It's happening all over the world right at the moment. And it seems that democracy, any type of sovereignty, is being eroded by corporations as we speak. And they're trying to amalgamate all of the local governing structures of the world into this New World Order, Agenda 21, reduce the population, reduce the food supply system. And unless people really get their head around it, they won't survive what is coming, because resistance has to be mobilized as soon as possible, especially with the Agricultural Defense Coalition.org. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our special guest is Rosalind Peterson, and we'll be right back after the break. Alert the masses. Summer, I was walking around in the suburbs of Auckland. Normally, you'd see bees everywhere. The last summer, over the whole summer, I saw a total of 3 bees. 3. In an entire season. One of which was a big, fat, hairy bumblebee that was inside my flat. Another one was a tiny little bee on the ground when I was walking around the suburbs. And the other one, ironically enough, was in a park in the city. And I have not seen a bee since. You know? It's incredible. And when I was a kid, there were bees everywhere. It was a real effort to not get stung. And now, what the heck has happened to them? Where are they all gone? Rosalind, perhaps you could shed some light on the topic.
Well, there's a number of theories about colony collapse disorder. We're losing bees here in the United States, Canada, and all around the world. Plus, we're losing the other pollinators, not just the honeybees themselves. All of the pollinators are beginning to decline at this point. And when we start putting up herbicides, pesticides, insecticides on everything, we have genetically modified foods. We have, in other words, we're conducting military experiments using different frequencies. We're doing all kinds of things which will eventually tend to disrupt this pollinator population. And the honeybees are definitely declining. I saw very few here this year, probably a dozen or two dozen. And so if you don't have a beekeeper with a hive nearby, your crop production is going to drop like a brick. And you're not going to have the flowers. You're not going to have about two-thirds of your foods if you don't have pollination from one source or another from these pollinators. So we're allowing Bayer Crop Science to put out neonicotinoids in order to, in other words, another insecticide. And we know from the label that it kills honeybees. Some countries have banned it. Some countries have banned it, and other countries are like us are allowing its use. So the chemical companies have invaded the universities with their money, so that a lot of reports that come out are delayed or won't be released because it looks bad for the chemical companies that produce these herbicides and insecticides and pesticides. Many beekeepers won't put their, in other words, their bees, the hives, into any area where there's genetically modified.
Okay, we'll be right back.
I take my anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we okay, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and we'll respect our right to live here on the land. It's Dino, I'm not Tina Tonga. We don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print a handy bike and loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan but don't print the interest. So there'll never be enough money to pay off all the debt. What do you get? Crash and burn. When will my people learn the truth? Come on now, before it's too late. Hey, I got a new law for you. Let's make charging interest illegal and I'll tear it all. So righteous, still good.
Yeah.
I wanna see me fail. So righteous, like Jesus.
There's a heck of a lot of people out there who want us to fail, but we ain't gonna, because we're about as depressed as we're ever going to get, and we're still angry enough to keep doing stuff. Our special guest is Rosalind Peterson from the Agriculture Defense Coalition. If you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, you have a link to her site right there. Rosalind, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Now, before we went on to the break, we were talking about the bee colony collapse. I'd like you to continue if you can.
Sure. What we're talking about here is that as worldwide honeybees and other pollinator populations decline for one reason or another, and that studies are being funded by the chemical companies themselves, who aren't going to release any information that would be negative to their position that they should be able to use these chemicals. The atmospheric, upper atmospheric experiments, the more pollutants we put in the atmosphere, like barium and aluminum, strontium, sulfur hexafluoride, sulfur, diborane, and other chemicals that we are putting up in the atmosphere in our upper atmospheric tests, especially here in the United States, are also going to have their impact, along with, in other words, HARP, and that's the High Altitude Aurora Research Program in Alaska, When we conduct all these experiments, we're going to cause the collapse everywhere of what we need to survive here on Earth. It's for all of us. Even the people conducting the experiments can't expect that some technology will save them in the end. So they're having this money, greed, and corporate power, and governments kind of backing them up now more and more, is leading us down the path to where our life is not going to be as good as it once was, and it's not going to be as good for our children and our grandchildren either. And as we take the honeybees out and the other pollinators, the flowers that we enjoy, the beauty that we see around us, the apples on trees, there won't be there anymore, or there will be very few. So, but the food supply dropping will affect everyone worldwide. It won't just affect, in other words, just the poor. It's going to affect middle classes. It's going to affect the rich as well, because soon their areas will be just as polluted as everywhere else, or contaminated, or they won't have the variety. So, you know, Bill Gates and some others have put in this huge seed bank where they're putting in all the seeds from around the world of every crop, of every type of plant, everything. And and it's like, well, we're going to reintroduce it into this world again once we gain whatever ends we're after with all these programs. And the idea here is that our air is going to be so polluted, our water will be so polluted and contaminated, our soils will be so contaminated, that even if they try to reproduce everything, it isn't going to work like it did before because we have destroyed it. So, you know, people say to me, well, the elite are going to go live underground in their own little encampments and all of this, but when they come out, they're not going, even if it's for a few weeks, when they come out, they're going to face the same problems that all of us face from their actions. They can't live underground forever. And what, they're going to put their kids and their children in underground compartments and live underground for the rest of their lives? I don't think so. I think it would be good torture for them to do that with their children and everyone else and say to their kids, well, we're just going to live in this underground society and we're going to destroy the earth outside because there will be nothing left for them either.
Well, this is the thing I agree with. I know a lot of people who know all these ingredients, if you will, that we're talking about, and they say, don't worry, man, I'm really happy. All this is coming out. Everything's going to be just fine. And they say it in this kind of sort of almost new agey sense, but I'm thinking to myself the whole time, well, how exactly? You know, an awakening is one thing. I don't think it's happening fast enough at the moment. But then you find that even situations people are awakened to, they do nothing about. Like, take the Gulf of Tonkin incident. So how are ordinary people actually going to respond to these technological advancements, especially in a way that counteracts them? I don't ever see that actually occurring.
It would
no, be. No, I was just going to be steamrolled. How's everything going to fix itself? To be honest, I know you don't think that way, but I know there's so many people out there who just think everything somehow magically going to fall into place and humans are going to be okay just because the human spirit is resilient.
Oh, I don't think it's magically going to just change because we wish it to. And I don't think that, you know, people call me all the time and they say to me, well, where can I move where this isn't happening? And I go, but it's happening everywhere around the world. It's not just happening in your location. And I said, we've got to stand and take a different tact here because there's nowhere to run to anymore. There's not this great horizon where, you know, in place where we can just go and there's going to be pristine and beautiful everything, and then we can go live whatever life we envision for ourselves. That's gone now. So I don't know if we can put a dent in it. But I think that we can bring it to public attention, and I think that when people begin to really see that their water supplies are gone or polluted and their food supply is deteriorating and all of these things are happening, they're sick and they don't know why. pretty soon they're going to stand up. And I think that they will stand up. And I think that these corporate egos and these scientists who think that technology is the answer to everything may start having more and more trouble with us, because we tend here and in other areas and around the world to be more rebellious. The problem is we've been so divided with these shallow issues, in other words, and the distractions of video games and television and whatnot, that we don't see the impacts of what's going on around us. But one day we will. And there may come a time for change. I don't know. It's hard to know.
It only takes two generations for people to forget where they come from, you know. And this, I think, is what's happening to the United States. No longer is history taught. And if it is, it's just dates and events. They don't teach you the real lessons of history about, you know, freedom versus tyranny, or spreading information to the public is one of the highest forms of patriotism, and it's now considered anti-American to be pro-American.
Well, I don't know about that one, but I do know that you're right about what's being taught in schools, that they're not teaching history, or we have right-wing and other groups here in the country rewriting history so that it's rewritten in a way that doesn't reflect reality. So that's a difficulty to overcome as well. And they're working on privatizing our libraries here in the United States now, so that private corporations will dictate what we can read or can't read and how much we'll have to pay for it. And or they'll close them. They'll privatize them, and within a short time they'll just close them. So there's a lot of changes going on, and most people clearly don't know that these changes are happening in the beginning. And then all of a sudden when they find out, sometimes it's too late. But that's why there's shows like yours. That's why, in other words, talk radio in a lot of places around the world is having programs to let people know what's really going on. And I think we still can make a difference. I may be naive, but I'm not willing to go down with the masses and just say I'm going to stand here and do nothing. I'm not willing to take that course of action either today or tomorrow.
Oh, you must definitely be naive then. I mean, why don't you just be a slave? I mean, come on.
Now, we all agree that it's slow steps towards where we want to see the world. But I sometimes think to myself that, you know, you see how fast they can move. You see how they being the establishment, can enact a piece of legislation that will take 3 years or 5 years with the best resistors to overcome, you know, and they can just pass it in a couple of days. It's just done in the stroke of a pen. And so you see that kind of balance of power in their court. And sometimes I wonder if the passive dispersal of information is enough, because history would show it's not enough. Because we've had a couple of, you know, the internet has revolutionized things, but we've had libraries for a long time, and we've had the general premise of what, you know, freedom is underpinned in society for a long time. But people should have been able to see the contrast with what governments were doing as opposed to the text. So to me, I tend to think that passive information dispersal maybe won't be enough.
It's not going to be enough. It's going to be people, in other words, working together outside of the internet. And the internet has some advantages, but there is one problem. Whenever there's been social change and other types of change that has happened in the past, people have worked together off the internet out and when it didn't exist, and organized into communities which have made great change over time. What happens on the internet is the internet has become a place to socialize for dating, play games, watch movies. It's become a place where people spend a lot of time blogging or just whining and complaining. So what happens is that they go on the internet and they say, I'm frustrated about this, and they start writing something, blogging, or they start writing something just to vent their own frustrations. And once that happens, they think that everybody in the world is reading that and that they're actually taking a direct action when they're doing nothing. They're going nowhere. But they think in some bizarre way that they've taken an action. And so it isn't with this Navy issue, it didn't start to change for many of us until I put the information, what I had at the time a year and a half ago when we first started this pitch battle here, I put it on the internet. But it wasn't until I went door to door, business to business, bookstore to bookstore, in other words, walked the streets, talked to people, walked on to boats where the fishermen were, walked everywhere and started talking to people and getting other people out to take an action, which wasn't just complaining on the internet. And so we've started to make a difference, and we're starting to get more people to rise up and say no to this. And unless we have that one-on-one communication, emails are good, but then you can't just talk to people of like mind. You have to go out and explain to every gender, every background, what's going on so that they clearly understand it and move it. And the way to move it is person to person and walking in and having a human contact with people versus just being on the internet complaining.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot of people like that. I call them armchair activists, the people who just won't get off their keister and actually make a difference in this world. And, you know, the motivation behind doing such a thing, I completely understand, because you want to do something, you want to do anything, right? But they don't take it through to its rational, logical conclusion, which is, you know, get up and do something about it if you want to make a difference. You know, you can't sit on the back benches and yell as loud as you can and, you know, just make comments on YouTube with exclamation marks to make a point.
No. And that's what people are thinking. We're teaching a generation that, well, the activism is just merely blogging and putting your opinion out there. And so what I do is I not only put it out there, but I print it up and I take it to public meetings and I do presentations and travel to Washington and actually go to the senators' offices and to the congressmen's offices and talk about these issues and go with other people. We also go give presentations to people in various areas, so we talk to them one-on-one. And there's nothing more stimulating than talking to people one-on-one because they're more likely to take an action doing the same versus just going on and pushing the whine complain button.
The whine and complain button. Well, you know what? With our new generation of bloggers, I think that Apple and Microsoft should probably incorporate one of these into the new keyboard designs, because after all, it would be one of the most important keys next to the escape key for all those who want to ignore reality. The whine and complain button. There we go. There's the next million-dollar idea that Steve Jobs can steal.
Well, it's like people who call me up and then they want to complain or they want to tell me what I can do. And I say, well, it isn't what I can do. I'm doing as much as I can. Now, what are you going to do? In other words, what step are you going to take? Are you going to do this or this or this? And all of a sudden, it's like, well, no, we're good at dispensing advice about what, you know, what they want me to do, what action to take or something. But they're not, but they don't want to take any action themselves. They just want to feel good about telling you what you should do. And so that doesn't go over very well with me, because if we don't all get into the soup together and battle our way out, we're going to be stuck. And so just telling one person what they should do is not going to be the answer. In other words, one person speaking out isn't it. It's the force of it.
Yeah, yeah. Personally, the action that we take on an individual basis is probably the most important, because it gives you something that a lot of people don't have. It's called self-respect. You know, people who try to criticize others for doing action and then do none of them and do no action themselves, they don't have a leg to stand on when it comes to on an argumentative basis. And you know, anybody who's put up YouTube videos or done a radio show will understand this concept quite completely in its entirety, because these people cannot argue, they have no facts, and they simply sit around whinging about what other people aren't doing. And if they would turn that ridiculous anger and misinformation back on themselves, they would actually be of some benefit to any cause that they align themselves with. But they don't. Perhaps the enemy propaganda is working too well. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Our special guest is Rosalind Peterson from the Agricultural Defence Coalition. We'll be right back. Bring the feed up, please, Dan.
I wanna jam it with you. We're jamming, jamming, and I hope you like jamming too.
We're culture jamming.
We can do it anyhow.
Throwing a monkey wrench into the new world order machine, jamming. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And if you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, you can see Rosalind Peterson, our fabulous guest. Rosalind, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. And might I say, you sound like you're talking with a bit of a grin on your face at the moment.
I am, because I'm enjoying your show, and also I kind of enjoy the flavor of having a little humor about things as well, so that's good too.
Oh, yeah. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. It's the lighter side of genocide. Yeah,
that's good.
We like to be amusing. It's like Doctor Who, for example, laughing in the face of your destroyer. Let them know I am not afraid, and I will resist you in every single part of the world. And this is something that the New World Order, I guess, has probably contemplated, that there is a global resistance mounting against them, but it's not a singularity of resistance. It is a multifaceted resistance, and everybody from every different corner of the world on pretty much every platform of the New World Order agenda, they're taking up arms, whether those arms be microphones or cameras or pens in the alternative media, and striking back. And the public is starting to get wind of this more regularly than that. Well, many truthers would ever think possible. And it's quite a positive time to be alive, I've found.
Oh, I think it is too. And I want to say that the internet isn't all bad, but I want to say that, you know, someone said to me, well, you should fix your website so you can just take the petition, push a button, and send it off. But you see, if that's their only action, it's not enough. And so it has to be that you take it a step further. You print up some copies and you go get signatures on a petition. You talk to your neighbors and your friends. So the action that you take will only grow if you get away from your computer and start to talk to people, go to meetings, and do different things. And that's where the educational process, and also that's where the activism really starts, is when people start to move off this push-button mentality on the Internet to a certain extent.
Yeah, yeah, and that's one thing that I try to do as often as I can, is actually get out and be in the company of other people of like mind, and also, in particular, those who disagree. I mean, often I'm the only one in public meetings standing up and talking about the New World Order agenda. And in so doing, though, I get an awful lot of attention, most of it positive, from the other people who don't want to stand up and make themselves a target, as it were.
That's also true. I agree with you on that. I've done the same thing.
Yeah, it's like when you stick your flag out, people rally behind you. It's an interesting thing, right? As soon as one person stands up, then another one will stand up. It's like Spartacus.
Yeah.
I'm anti-New World Order. No, I'm anti-New World Order.
Well, I think that you're very right on that. And I think that the more people get together themselves and begin to stand up, actions take place. And we begin to say, no, we're not going down that path. No, we won't vote for you unless you, in other words, begin to do what we want, rather than just voting, for a party or voting for a group. We're starting to say here in the United States more and more, we're only going to vote for you if you start to enlist yourself into our causes and what we want. And so there's a little bit of a change going on, an undercurrent now more than ever. In some areas, and so I think that's good.
So you're saying a no vote if they're puppets of the system, just don't vote, because this is a hard one.
No. I'm not saying don't vote, but usually you have two people or two or three people running for some office here in the States, and what happens is that we go and say, look, if you want to be reelected, and we hold our vote precious, we won't vote for you if you're not going to stand up and represent our interests. I mean, there was an issue about the U.S. Navy, and our congressman was going to do nothing. And finally, we started to put the word out that he wouldn't be reelected for dog catcher here in our area unless he stood up. And we got some press coverage, and we organized a demonstration. And he started to have to do something, even if he didn't want to. He did, because he realized that his constituents weren't on Republican and Democrat and middle of the road weren't going to vote for him.
Say if these people were all Bilderberg and CFR, as most of them are. What about just not voting for them? I mean, you know.
If I don't like either candidate, I may elect not to vote, and have done that a couple of times in my lifetime as well. So, but what I find is that usually there's one candidate that steps out, and we support and we support those candidates that are willing to step up. So, and we keep the pressure on all year. So it's not like they just go to Washington and then they can ignore us. We're starting more and more to keep the pressure on our elected officials all the time. And to publicly take them to task if they don't follow through.
Yeah. And there was something that came up from a listener on the Renz, Jeff Renz show. What did he say? Oh, yeah. Stand outside your congressman's house with a sign that says, we know what you did and we know where you live. You know, putting pressure on these individuals, I think, is probably going to be one of the important aspects of resistance to it, because basically, I think that a lot of these people that decide that it's a great idea to get into elected public office via deception are deathly afraid of being exposed, and more to the point, having the resistance to their lies on their own personal doorsteps. Now, I wanted you to tell me about the California governor election.
Oh, this
There's some
is wonderful.
Interesting stuff going on there. Tell us about it.
Former Governor Jerry Brown, whose father was actually a governor of California, and he was a governor for two terms several years ago, and so he decided to run again. And he's one of these austere, really interesting individuals who will help the environment and who have stood for the people for many years. He doesn't have a big war chest here. And so what's happening, he's running against a woman who, the former head of a corporation who made millions and millions of dollars outsourcing jobs. She's enriched herself over her workers and employees of the corporation she worked for. So she was kind of dismissed under questionable circumstances, I believe, and so she has spent $119 million of her own money, not including all the contributions that come in from other people, to buy the governorship here in California. And a lot of people, she never voted prior to this year in an election. She had never voted, never bothered to vote, never bothered to know who the candidates were. Totally, the electoral system was totally beyond her. And so what happened is all of a sudden she's arrived and decided that she wants to be governor. And and the best way to do it is...
This is crack up. How many people are actually in California? I mean, how many dollars per Californian is she spending? Is it like, what, $1.20 per Californian that she's popping into the pot?
Oh, she's putting in a lot of money. You know, there's only 250 million people, or I don't know, 260, I don't know what it is, but in the United States. So then you figure out that she spent $119 million as of last month, and she's spending more between now and the election. So she's spending all this money, and she's behind in the polls right now. And she's having difficulty because she's taken some corporate stands here about what she's going to do. The people of California are beginning to see her for what she really is. So it's the Goliath of money versus the people's interests right at the moment. And so far, I think former Governor Jerry Brown, if enough people come out to vote for him, will prevail in this money race.
Hey, well, now, wouldn't that be great if so much money was spent by, shall we say, people who don't deserve what they're trying to buy with their money, if it was all for naught, and that real people who are actually standing on the side of freedom, on the side of patriotism, and on the side of America actually get elected. Wouldn't that be amazing? All right?
When it's going to be amazing. I think it would be amazing.
Doesn't happen very often in America, does it?
Well, there are a few people that get elected who are really great, but we don't elect enough of them, and so they're sometimes outgunned and outnumbered. But if they have the backing of the people, then we succeed in getting some things changed for the better. So it's like being on a roller coaster ride. It goes up and down.
Yeah, and we've got these things called career politicians, and for goodness sake, all right? Originally, congressmen and that kind of thing, they were meant to serve for a very short period of time, okay? Serve their communities and then go back to their plantations or whatever the heck else they had to do in the private sector. Today, we've got these career politicians who think that it's their divine right to rule, and they've been in the political manipulation game for so long that they can't even say a lick of truth come out of their mouth no more, right? And everybody's so upset with them, and yet, like masturbation, everybody still votes for them but doesn't tell nobody about it.
I think that this is true in some cases, but what worries me sometimes more is that the lobbyists never leave Washington, D.C. There's about 600 or 700 lobbyists per every elected official in Washington, D.C. Even when you... I know, it's a shocker. And even when you send someone new to Washington, D.C., he's got 600 or 700 lobbyists who are going to be trying to get him to do one thing or another and greasing the palm, so to speak, with money and writing legislation and doing all these things. So sometimes sending a new person, you're sending them into the lion's den, essentially, of the lobbyists who live perpetually in Washington, D.C.
I know. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's like a political warfare at a scale not before seen, right? It'd be like if New Zealand sends their whole contingent of SAS troops, about like 14 of them or something, to take out China. You know, just absolutely insane to expect a huge amount of success because of just, well, the unlevel playing field. And this is the thing that I'd really love to see. Americans en masse voting out those incumbents and getting rid of the lobbyists from Washington, just like Barack H. O. Barry, our Lord and Savior, promised, but didn't deliver on. Just like all his other promises, of course.
Yes, which are being kept. So here we are. I'd like to bring up one other issue, if you wouldn't mind.
Go for your life.
Global geoengineering governance is coming down the pike very fast right now. And one of the things is that the UK Parliament decided to release its geoengineering fifth report in March of 2010. And the Royal Society is pushing global geoengineering governance. And they're both working with the U.S. House Science and Technology Committee, whose final geoengineering report will come out around the 15th of this month. What is scary about this is that they're really talking about going ahead and experimenting, putting particles and chemicals into the atmosphere to reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth. And when you couple that with persistent jet contrails that are producing white haze and man-made cloud cover, which already reduces the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth, this is a catastrophe in the wings.
Listen to the Eastwood Show. We'll be right back.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. You are hearing, you are listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, the lighter side of genocide, broadcasting live from the future, from the old island paradise, fluoride head fortress, New Zealand. And our special guest on the line is Rosalind Peterson from Agriculture Defence Coalition, which you can click on the link at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And I apologise about the break cutting you off there, Rosalind. I'd like you to continue with the geoengineering.
Yes. The U.S. House of Representatives here in the United States held hearings, and so did the U.K. Parliament, on the issue of solar radiation management, in other words, reducing the amount of sunlight that reaches the Earth with a variety of questionable techniques, including using toxic chemicals like sulfur, including using chemicals to brighten clouds, etc. And one of the things that these kangaroo court hearings were is they only allowed those that wanted to conduct these experiments to speak. The public wasn't invited to speak. In other words, the U.S. Department of Fish and Game wasn't allowed to speak. Agriculture, no one representing agriculture was allowed to speak, even though we know that when you reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth, there will be less photosynthesis and crop production will drop, and that those chemicals, when they come down, will pollute our water, will pollute our soils, and also make them unproductive in some ways. Sulfur, for example, causes acid rain and asthma in children, and yet we're talking about putting sulfur into the atmosphere on a continuing basis to cool the Earth down. Well, this is really problematic, and they're talking about global geoengineering governance of both the UK Parliament and the United States, because it has to be, according to them, a global condition where we put these particles and chemicals up all around the world all at the same time, and that we conduct ocean experiments. We conduct a wide variety of experiments. Some are now ongoing, as admitted by the UK Parliament report in March 2010 that came out, their fifth report. Experimental weather modification, all kinds of things to change the climate. And I just wanted to let your listeners know that there's information on my website about that and about the hearings and where they can get further information and government documents as well. And that this is something that we may need to address, because once they start reducing the amount of direct sunlight reaching the earth, there will be less food and the trees will start dying from the acid rains, and our soils and waters will become more polluted. This has consequences for everything we do. So I just wanted to let your audience know that this information was available.
Well, I'm glad there's such a bright future ahead of us.
Well, I don't know. You know, someone called me last week, an interesting person, and she couldn't drink the water from the community in which she lived, or water from the United States. So what she told me is she was buying this expensive water from New Zealand because it was the best. And I bit my tongue because I wanted to say, well, someone probably has privatized the water in New Zealand so that they can sell it to the in the United States for a lot of money. And I didn't like this idea at all. But it was kind of interesting because here we are.
Yep. Precisely the same thing, right? And this is the part about the new world order that people don't really get, is that it's a new world order, okay? It's happening absolutely everywhere, from the smallest island nation of New Zealand to the largest police state in the world, the United States. You know, there is literally no escape from a new world order, and you can only really expose it and resist it in all the ways that you can. And I think that on the one hand, this is going to be an immense logistical challenge for the truth movement to organize themselves in ways that are capable of resisting the new world order agendas in their entirety. And on the other hand, there is the what the show's sort of about is about the unity aspect. As we're all under threat by the same group of elite scum banksters, it means that we can unite along those lines much easier. And, well, quite frankly, that's kind of what I wanted to do with this show, is bridge the gap and let all you know there in the United States that, hey, you're not alone.
Sure. And I think that that's great.
Well, thank you all.
Well, you know what? You know what they don't like? They don't care for us to speak out, and they don't want us to unite. They want to throw so many different issues at us, and they want to keep us bickering among ourselves and fighting on nonsense issues that mean absolutely nothing in the long term. In other words, they want us to fight over religion. They want us to fight over all kinds of odd issues. Birth control, we should fight about that. We should fight about these nonsensical issues. In a sense, not just because they divert us from what the real agenda is. And I think that we can break through this. I have to be positive. I mean, for myself, and also for, because I have two grandchildren, but also because I feel that it's important. I'm not going to lay down and let this Mack truck roll over me without a fight. And other people are beginning, more and more, beginning to say no to this as well. And we just have to unite together and stand up.
And that is a good point to leave it on. Thank you very much, Rosalind Peterson, for joining us here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Fire out your website if you wish.
Yes, my website is theagriculturedefensecoalition.org. And please feel free to, my contact information is on there. You can call or email, and you can join us and learn more about what's going on in the world that is going to impact all of us in a very substantial way in the future. And thank goodness for this radio show, Vinny, and all that you do as well, because without you, this message would not get to the public.
Okay, and there she goes. That's Rosalind Peterson from the Agricultural Coalition at thevineyeastwoodshow.com. We'll be back tomorrow. Intel Hub up next.